Welcome to Health Matters, the Mental Health Edition. I'm your host, Dr. Shelley Visconti, psychologist, licensed professional counselor, and marriage and family therapist. This evening, we're discussing COVID-19 and mental health. As our guests, we have licensed professional counselors, Clint Davis and Natasha Fields from Clint Davis Counseling and Integrative Wellness. Clint, I'm going to start with you. Tell us a little bit about you and what you do at Clint Davis Counseling and Integrative Wellness.
Yeah, I'm the owner and operator. We have a counseling practice here in Shreveport that have, I think, 14 clinicians, LPCs, LMSWs, MFTs, and we also have massage therapy, craniosacral therapy, yoga. We have an ABA who works with autism and Asperger's, and a dietitian. So, you know, we've kind of opened the practice in October, and we've been really trying to just treat people holistically and help them in a way that can kind of meet a lot of their needs and get to the root causes. So I've been in Shreveport for about 10 years and been licensed for about 7. And yeah, that's me.
And Natasha, tell us what you do at Clint Davis Counseling and Integrative Services.
Hi, I'm a licensed counselor at the practice, and I work with clients from about 12 on up. I kind of specialize and lean towards women's issues. I do a lot of trauma work with people a lot with anxiety and depression and relationship issues. I'm born and raised in Shreveport, and I've been a licensed counselor for about 2 years, but I've been in the field for over 10 years.
So Natasha, you mentioned depression and anxiety. That's a lot of what I'm seeing going on with some of my patients because of a lot of the just difficulties and things that are going on, not only with COVID-19, but just, you know, all the things that are going on right now that have been and are really difficult. What are y'all seeing as far as in your patient populations, and what are y'all recommending to people as far as getting them through these difficult times?
Well, we're seeing a lot of anxiety, a lot of depression. We're seeing a lot of people not understanding why they feel so anxious and why they aren't able to be as productive as they wish they could be during this time. So we're spending a lot of time doing education, normalizing anxiety, letting people know that anxiety disorders are the most common mental illness in the U.S., and making sure that they have the tools that they need to cope with what's going on in the world today and take good care of themselves.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think the psychoeducation piece is so important because, unfortunately, we switched to telehealth, which we've done for a while. We've kind of opened back up for clients now that we've entered a phase two to let people come back into the office and as they need to. Some people are still telehealth. It just depends on their risk level and our risk level. But, you know, I think explaining to people that they're grieving and that we're all grieving, that we're kind of going through the stages, and letting them know actually what's happening has been, I think, very helpful. You know, I think for most of us, when we don't understand what's happening and why it's happening, then we tend to blame ourselves or think we should be doing something better. And then, you know, you do have the people who are success stories during COVID, and they've got, you know, they've lost 60 pounds and they've learned how to play the violin. And, you know, and so we all think that should be us. And so trying to help people to realize, like, hey, you're in survival mode, and it's okay if, like, you get up and just take care of yourself and your kids and your husband and your wife, and, you know, that's all right. So trying to just really let them know, like, you're in a grieving process, you know, you're going through the stages of grief, and this is traumatic. This is traumatic on a global scale, and that's okay. And we're all in it together, because that's the interesting part. Is one of my friends called me and she said, hey, I usually call you for advice, but, like, you're in the middle of this with me. I'm like, yeah, I know. You can usually call somebody and say, hey, you've been through this before, you survived it, what do I do? And even as clinicians, like, that's hard sometimes, because we're in the middle of it going, hey, here's what I know to do, but I'm in here with you and we don't know what's happening next month or the month after. And, you know, let's just do this together. So that's been pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, there have been pandemics in other generations, but for us, this is a whole new world. And so even as mental health professionals, you know, we are trying to figure this out ourselves. You know, a lot of us have done telehealth in the past or, you know, a little bit, but not nearly as much as we've done more recently. And so it's a learning curve for us. And I think everybody just remembering that, you know, the loss of control, the uncertainty, it's really, really difficult. What have y'all recommended to patients as far as those things, that just because there is a lot of feeling of not feeling in control and uncertainty about the future and where this is all going next?
One of the things that I frequently recommend, one of the first things that I frequently recommend is exercising, because it does help give you a sense of control. It puts endorphins in your bloodstream. It makes you feel better instantly. Also journaling, because that's a great way to process your emotions. It's a healthy way to get those thoughts out. And then paying attention to the difference between your feelings and facts, because you feel totally out of control, there still are some things that you have some control over.
Absolutely. That's good. Yeah. I think, one of the reframing is one of the key things, you know, trying to take, you know, kind of negative things that we say to ourselves, like, hey, this is always going to be this way, or this is just life now. You know, when we get in that kind of bargaining, despair, parts of grief, we start, you know, making excuses or trying to minimize, and just teaching people to reframe and say, look, instead of I should be able to do X, Y, and Z, say it would be nice if I could, but I can't right now. So now what? You know, giving them room to move without shaming themselves and sticking themselves in a right or wrong position. So, and then for those people that, you know, they can, like, taking these moments and taking this time and realizing, like, we may never get this again. You know, you may never get time with your kids and time with your family and time to kind of decompress. And so there are benefits to this. And that's not the case for everybody. Some people are working their booties off and, you know, haven't gotten a break yet. You know, I know for myself, I haven't gotten a break yet. I'm ready for another week and take my kids to the beach. Because, you know, some people are really, really going at it, and first responders and therapists and doctors and nurses and, you know. So that's the other reminder of people, is that even though we're all in this together, be sensitive to kind of what everybody else has got going on, and don't assume that just because your life looks a certain way that everybody else's does. And so kind of be patient with each other, because, you know, this is a definitely unprecedented in our time.
Yeah, I think what you said, Clint, was important about, you know, not shaming. You know, everybody is going to react differently to this, and some people may flourish, but a lot of us are struggling. A lot of us are really having some pretty significant difficulties. And I think giving yourself a break and the fact that, you know, it's okay if you are struggling. You know, a lot of times we look at social media and see everybody else they're doing cute videos with the family, and they, you know, these other people are, you know, learning to bake bread and right. You know, learning a language. And here I am, I'm struggling to get out of bed every morning. So I think that that's really important to remind people that, you know, this is difficult, and it's okay if this has been a difficult period for you. It's great that if it hasn't, but it's also okay that if this has been a struggle.
Yeah, that's been another huge recommendation that I've had for people, is, which was before COVID, which I think is a great test, but is get off social media, you know, like abstain from it. Don't get on there. You know, I actually put on my phone a lock on both Instagram and Facebook that my wife has to swipe me in so I can post from our counseling page, just so I don't get on there and scroll and try to get my news, because I'm not just getting news from there. I'm getting everybody's opinions and everybody's, you know, diary, and I'm getting everybody's, you know, fear and anxiety. And especially, you know, in the Facebook world, it just seems like everybody's having a panic attack in the comments at all times. And that's just not good for us, our mental health. You know, none of that stuff most of it is not factual. So, you know, take a break from that, abstain from that, and have some self-control, because it's not doing you any good. You know, it's only escalating your anxiety and your fears and your worry. And, you know, it's not much positivity sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my doctoral dissertation was on the evils of social media. So don't get me started.
Yeah, you get it.
Yeah, so I do. I think that we need to really watch social media and just remember that a lot of times people are presenting their best self on social media. That's not reality. A lot of times it's hype, not reality. So
absolutely.
I like to look at it and remind people that they're comparing their insides to someone else's outsides, and they're looking at their highlight reel. And just to remember that's not, it's never going to match up. It's never going to be what's really going on in your life.
So I'm seeing a lot of my people are having sleep problems. Do y'all have any recommendations as far as sleep? I know a lot of our schedules are a little out of whack, and just the stress and anxiety. Any recommendations as far as getting our sleep regulated and getting better sleep?
Yeah, I mean, I've had to shift a lot of things. So, I only have one cup of coffee in the morning. I have it in the morning, and that's it. And because if I drink anything after like 11, I can feel my anxiety. I can't go to bed. I start, you know, wondering and thinking. And I realized, like, one day, probably 3 weeks ago, I had like a Coke Zero at lunch. And I was like wired that night. I was like, what's going on? And I was like, oh yeah, I drink like caffeine. I wasn't thinking caffeine. I was thinking coffee, you know, that's it. So limit your caffeine intake. I mean, I know that can, you know, be a pain, but it's really, really terrible to be drinking caffeine past noon. You know, watch your sugar intake. A lot of us cope with candy and ice cream, and we're just sitting around doing what we have to do, but that kills our sleep. And then again, back to screens, you know, cutting that screen out, you know, 2 hours before bedtime, read a book, do some deep breathing. You know, one of the greatest techniques I learned was like to try to blink 1,000 times. So, you know, just count your blinks, you know, in 100, and just as fast as you can, try to get to 1,000. And your eyes are muscles. So they actually do get tired if you do that. And that's something that I found to be super helpful.
And also making sure you have, like Clint said, that routine as you go, as you prepare for bed, to just remind yourself that it's time to settle down. Remembering not to sleep all day, you know, just because you don't have to necessarily get up at a certain time for some people. Remembering to get up, have a certain place for work, a certain place for play, a certain place for exercise, and just making sure that there's a routine toward the bedtime, almost like a bedtime ritual, is going to be really helpful.
So what about kids? Another thing, I've had a lot of parents who have commented that they're seeing an increase in some behavioral problems and just emotionality with their children. Any suggestions as to how parents can help children through this time and to help their children cope?
I think it's really important to remember that our children are dealing with the pandemic as we are and are experiencing a variety of emotions, and they don't typically have the vocabulary to explain what they're going through. So the first thing that I think is really important is to be sensitive that they're going through this with us, and they are confused and afraid, and many times they act out because they don't have the vocabulary to express themselves. And it's only what they do, what they know how to do. It's important that we educate them on their level as to what is going on, as much as it is appropriate for their grade level and for their level, and just comfort them and remind them that again, we're all going through this together and we're figuring it out. We may not have the answers, but we're going to muddle through it together.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would say the same thing and just echo what Natasha said. You know, one of the things with my kids is mine are 5.5 and 2.5. So obviously the 2.5 knows nothing. But the 5.5, he, you know, we pray for the virus, you know, and people infected by the virus every night. And now we've moved into praying for, you know, Black Lives Matter and these things in our culture. And so, you know, when things are in the media and they're going on, our kids hear about it. They might not know the big context of it. But I think depending on their age and depending on where they're at, you know, we can give them some support. And then like she said, like if we don't know, you know, tell them that, like, you know, we don't know all the answers, but that's okay. Somebody's figuring it out. And then when they stop asking questions, you know, you can check in every once in a while, but it's also okay to let them, you know, not to bombard them with information if they don't, if they're not asking, if they seem fine and they're playing and they're not anxious and there's no outward signs, don't just allow that to be. Check in, but don't, you know, continue to give information that, in my opinion, they, you know, they don't necessarily need or they don't want. I think sometimes that's our own anxiety of, like, you know, trying to settle them down and settle ourselves down. And so I think that's always my advice for parents is, you know, you have to self-regulate, because your job is to help co-regulate that kid. And so if you're anxious and fired up and flying off the handle, and then you come in, you know, they feel that and they pick up on that. And so take a break. You know, if you're married, if you're, you know, have a partner, take breaks, take a second to go outside, you know, say, hey, I need a tag, and you take this for a little bit. And I know that's, you know, that's one of the biggest things, I'm sure, too, that, you know, parents are struggling with, just being home with their kids all day, every day, doing the same thing. And, you know, there's a lot to say about what we can do about that, too.
Yeah, parents, I know a lot of the parents that I work with are really struggling, especially, you know, it's difficult enough being a parent, but also being a teacher and doing it, doing all of these things 24/7, you know, not really having as much of a break as a lot of people are not getting those breaks that they did previously. With some of the other things that are going on, you know, we have COVID that's going on, but we also have the protests and other things that are going on. How do we, any suggestions on talking to children about that? Because, you know, we already are under stress, and then we have these additional social things that are going on that are difficult for adults to wrap our heads around. Any suggestions on talking with children about some of the things that are in the news that are happening right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the same way, I think we need to teach our, you know, for me, I'm trying to teach my kids to listen and learn. You know, I'm a white male. And so, you know, I think it's important right now during this period for me just to continue to listen. And me and Natasha had a fantastic conversation a couple of days ago, or a week and a half ago, probably, about COVID and the African-American community. And we were just talking about the differences when, you know, if I come to work and say, well, I'm fine, and, you know, it's not that big of a risk to me, and she's going home every day and she has family members that are struggling and that are, you know, sick and that are passing away, or that, you know, it's a totally different perspective. So trying to teach our kids that, you know, we don't have to have the right answers, but we can listen and hear from each other and pray for each other and think of each other as human beings, I think is super important. You know, even the riots as they go down, like, not just seeing them as a black and white issue. And I don't even mean race. I just mean, you know, rigid thinking as far as, like, oh, well, there's only one right way. And instead, trying to ask those why questions, like, well, why are people rioting? Why are people angry? You know, why are people doing these things? And giving them good reasons other than, you know, trying to simplify it down to, you know, something negative.
You know, like Clint said, I agree with everything Clint said. Education is important. Giving them the opportunity to ask questions and letting them feel safe enough to ask those questions and answer in as honest of a way as you can at that time as a parent. And sometimes the answer is, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. It's okay if as a parent you don't know the answer. But at least giving them the opportunity to ask the question, and then making sure they have the room and the space and the opportunity to process if needed is going to assist them with feeling safer in a very chaotic world.
Absolutely. The other thing I think has been super helpful is like, if your kids have friends or people that do make them feel safe or connected, because I think, you know, in times of stress, we're all looking for connection and safety. You know, let them zoom with their friends, let them zoom with a grandparent, let them zoom with somebody, and talk about it. If they're old enough and they have, you know, African-American friends or Caucasian friends or a different ethnicity, them, let them zoom and talk and, you know, check on them and say, hey, what's going on with you? Me and mom were talking about this. Is this how you feel? You know, and let them learn from the person who's struggling. If you have a family member who's a police officer, you know, right now it's a really challenging time for first responders. And a lot of cops are, you know, good people and feeling like, well, you know, why am I being held to a standard because this one guy's mistake? And, you know, there's all this kind of language and comments and posts. And the reality is, you know, we got to take people, you know, on a one-on-one basis and the people in our lives. And so teaching our kids to do that and say, look, that's what this person did. You know, this is what these people are experiencing, and trying to teach them to actually go to the kind of the horse's mouth and go, what do you know? And what do you think? And what's been your experience? And how can I empathize with that with our community is super vital. I think I didn't learn that lesson early on. And, you know, I think that's something that we can all teach our kids, is to see people as individuals instead of putting them in a group and saying, well, then you must be this way because you're this color or this job or this, you know, whatever.
This evening we have licensed professional counselors Clint Davis and Natasha Fields. I want to invite our listeners to call in with a question or comment. The number is 1-800-552-8502. Yeah, I think that something that all of us can do right now is to listen more and talk less. And that's always the suggestion that I give to parents with their children. You know, just sit back and listen and let them talk. And you don't necessarily have to have all of the answers. A lot of times they will figure it out for themselves if you just give them the space to do that. But I think as adults right now, that's good advice for all of us to take right now. Is do some listening, you know, shut our mouths and do some listening, because there's a lot of listening that needs to be done. So any other suggestions as far as children right now helping with, I know that, you know, it's summertime, but we're going to have school going to be starting back, and we don't know what that's going to look like. Any suggestions for parents as far as managing school and children and the future?
I mean, honestly, my advice for people is to not worry about it. And I know that might sound, that's not usual for me to say, but the reality is like, we do not know what the fall is going to bring. And as soon as we start trying to, you know, like, I know there was a post that went around for a week or so, like most things, and that's about it. And we stopped talking about it, but talking about, you know, all the rules and restrictions for the CDC and all these things. And then you look through it and it's like, well, that's not actually what they said. They said this, but even if that's a suggestion, that's crazy. And, you know, you go back and forth. But the reality is we don't know. And so what an opportunity for the summer just to focus on what we're doing day to day, you know, finding activities to do together, getting sidewalk chalk, going back to kind of the simplicity of, I think, you know, some of the best things in our culture that we can do is spend time and connection together and get off screens and get outside. And that's been, I think, a lot of the parents in my neighborhood have been like, it's really fun to see kids riding bikes and families taking walks together. And so that's what I would focus on is, you know, we don't know what, we can't even plan, you know, and if we keep getting frustrated with the fact that we don't know, then we just stir ourselves up and we're anxious and we're frustrated and we're scared. So, you know, taking it day by day, you know, I work with a lot of people doing 12 steps and people struggling with addiction. And, you know, they were laughing the other day in our group because they were like, well, man, we're doing this all the time anyway. You know, we're just trying to take it day by day. So, you know, trying to plan for the future that we don't know is scary, but I think the best way to do it is one step at a time.
Yeah, and that's a, I think that's a good analogy, because it is, you do have to, this is a good time to really take that to heart, you know, to take it day by day and try not to focus too much on the things that we can't control and that we don't know and that we're not going to know for a little while.
And I'm not saying that's easy. Trust me.
Yeah, no, it's not.
As a therapist, I'm like, oh man, what am I going to do with my kids? How soon can they get out of this? You know, but the reality is, yeah, you can't control it. And we as human beings, I mean, we love control. You know, it's safety. If we feel like we can control something, then we feel safe. And so many of us have been hurt and had trauma and had things happen to us that, you know, seeking safety is our primary, you know, that lizard brain kicks in and we, you know, we got to have it. But I think when we realize we have no control all the time anyway, we can find some peace and contentment.
So what about, you know, we are entering into phase two in Louisiana, and then also, you know, Texas, Arkansas are opening more. And so people are starting to venture out. How do we manage that anxiety as we start to reemerge into the public and interact with other people?
One great way to manage that anxiety is to have a plan. Have a plan based on how you feel, what your belief system is, if it's mask, not mask. Just have a plan. Create a plan that works for you, because it will give you more of a sense of control. And you'll feel a little bit more like you have some direction as you move toward what you're going to do. Keep yourself informed. Know what's going on. That's also going to make you feel a little bit safer. And then take it easy. Understand that we all are feeling anxious as life opens back up. We all have worries about what ifs and some excitement about the fact that we're able to leave and do some things. And so I like to say, just be gracious with yourself. Be gracious with yourself and understand that those feelings are normal. We're all having them, and communicating with people, having a plan, and staying informed and taking it easy would just probably be a good start.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, assuming that not everybody's going to agree with you, and they're not all going to be doing what you want them to be doing, whether that's a mask or no mask, because if you go out, you know, to Lowe's or go somewhere and you're not focused on your safety and your plan and what you're okay with and what you're okay to being exposed to, you're going to find yourself being very triggered and very frustrated and overwhelmed very quickly. So, I think, you know, giving ourselves grace, but also extending grace to everybody else. You know, I have clients who, you know, were in an armed robbery and, you know, the people had masks on. And so there's a whole nother level of like, hey, come to the office, we'll wear a mask. Like, you know, so you never know what's going on in people's lives on why they don't. Maybe they have, you know, PTSD. Maybe they have an anxiety disorder. Maybe they have asthma. But they had to go that one day, and that's the only day they went out to Kroger. You know, but we become so fear-based that we become very judgmental and very critical very quickly. And so we see a mom with her three kids in Kroger, and we're like, oh, my gosh, they don't have masks on, and she's in there. She doesn't care about, you know, we go down this rabbit hole, and it's like we have no clue what's happening in other people's lives and what they have going on. So, you know, we see something we don't like, and instead of taking offense, just take a deep breath, ask somebody to step back or to step back yourself, or, you know, do what you have to do. But try to remember that, you know, there's a lot going on for a lot of different people, and you can be respectful of other people's space. You know, I was at Lowe's a couple weeks ago, and I had to run in for something. And so I thought I was in my wife's car, and I didn't have my mask in my car. And I was like, oh, I got to go in here. And I was like, I'm going to feel like a terrible person as I go through Lowe's. So I'm through Lowe's, and, you know, one of the workers came up, and I could tell she was super anxious because she had a mask on and I didn't. And I just apologized and said, hey, you know, I know I'm supposed to have a mask on, or I can tell you're a little, you know, nervous. You know, I'm sorry about that. I'll keep space, you know, or I can go on to somebody else. And she was like, thanks, you know, no problem. I'm just really nervous about getting sick. And I was like, it's no big deal. I'll go ask somebody else, or I'll find it. And she was like, I appreciate it, you know. And that, you know, having the perspective of, oh, it's her job, she should still have to help me, like, that's not a good perspective for us to have. And so I think, again, just being gracious and patient with each other is super, super important.
This evening, we have Clint Davis and Natasha Fields as our guests. They are licensed professional counselors, and we invite our listeners to call in with their questions about mental health. The number is 1-800-552-8502. So, Clint, a little while ago, you mentioned grieving, and that you know, part of this is allowing yourself to grieve. Would you talk a little bit more about?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things I think grief is something that we forget is a thing. You know, we say it and we use it, but we forget when we're actually, it doesn't have to just be a death that we grieve. It can be friendships. It can be a time. It can be opportunity. I know a lot of us had plans this year to do things, and those plans have gotten squashed. And so there's loss there. You know, grief is really about loss, whether it's loss of any of those things I said earlier. And one of the griefs that I see people going through is what's called anticipatory grief. I had a brother-in-law who died of brain cancer, and, you know, we knew he was going to go, and it took 2 years for that to happen. And so we were in this stage of like, it's living grief. How do I deal with this knowing it's coming, or what the changes are going to be? The changes are going to be different for his daughter and his wife. And it's the same thing now. We're all in the moment going, okay, I know change is coming. I know there's going to be a big shift in what we're going to have to do and what that's going to look like, but I have no clue. And so I'm just anticipating that coming. There's no closure. There's no, end in sight. And so I've seen us and myself move through these stages already with COVID. You know, it's, you know, first we're in denial, You know, we're like, you know, what is happening? You know, I don't think this is going to happen. You know, it came to China. It's only going to be China. There's no way it's that big of a deal. And then you see it start coming into America and the United States. And it's like, oh, well, that's just going to be New York. And then, you know, we're in Treeport going, oh, it's not a big deal. And then there's like two cases and we're like, and then all of a sudden it blows up. And then we're like, oh my gosh. And I can remember them shutting down the gyms and starting to shut down. And I got frustrated. You know, I'm like, really? There's like two people with it. Why are we having to do blah, blah, and blah, blah? And that's the second stage, which is anger. You know, we're moving into this frustration. And then we get into bargaining. And it's like, okay, well, maybe we'll lock down for 3 weeks. And then it'll all be over. And we can all go back to whatever life we had before this. And it won't be a big deal. And then I think we've moved into despair, where we realize that's not the case. And that's not going to be the case. And, you know, and we're like super sad that things are going to change and businesses have closed down and our favorite, you know, places to go are not there. And, you know, we can't go to the park. We can't go to, you know, the art gallery. We can't go to Norton and walk around. And so we just sit in sadness for a bit. And some of us are still there. You know, I feel like some of us have moved to the last stage, which is acceptance. You know, we accepted that this is here now and this is the new normal and we're going to have to figure that out together. Unfortunately, you know, with the riots and with the things that have happened in the media and the death of an African American by a police officer, that all got squashed. And so now we're grieving that. Now we're back in denial. You know, we're back in anger. You know, I haven't seen too much, you know, bargaining just yet. So it's interesting how grief continues to flow and it's kind of just overlapping and being on top of each other. I think the last stage of grief, which, you know, Dr. Kubler-Ross, you know, came up with those stages, but I can't remember the guy's name, but he came up with the sixth stage, which is making meaning. And I hope that that's what we can do on this show and in our therapy offices is help people make meaning of their grief and of their pain and of their problems as individuals and go, okay, well, what does this mean to you? What do these changes mean to you? What does racism mean to you? What does this pandemic mean for you? And let's figure out how to move forward. So that's kind of what I've been working clients through is helping them understand that.
Yeah, and I think people forget that grief is a part of every day. It's not, I think we think of it just, you know, we grieve when people die. But you know, all the kids that didn't get to go through normal graduations, I mean, that's something to grieve. There are lots of things that we're having to grieve, small things and big things, every day. And yeah, I think it's important that people remember that these are things that we're grieving and to allow themselves to go through that process.
Absolutely.
We have a caller. We have John from Fishville. John, go right ahead with your question or comment.
I've got, let's kind of go back to the basics. We're told daily to wash your hands for 20 seconds, but there's a confusion about the face mask. I understand that, well, most people don't understand that the face mask is not to protect you. It's to protect you from spreading if you, by chance, have that virus in your breath. And so, you know, it's backwards. Everybody I talk to says, oh, I'm protected. I've got my mask on. That's wrong. Why can't the media kind of push it the correct direction?
Yeah, I mean, there has been a lot of confusion about what we need to do and what we don't need to do. But I think that one of the things that we've heard pretty consistently is wash your hands, try not to touch your face, and, you know, masks will help with the spread. But, you know, early on when there was even more confusion, you know, I had somebody say, you know, that mask, it doesn't really help you. And I said, you know, if it lessens somebody's anxiety, you know, let's say it doesn't help. If it makes someone feel less anxious being around me, then that's worth the minor inconvenience.
Absolutely.
So, you know, that's kind of the way I feel, is that if it helps, great. And even if it just helps by reducing somebody else's anxiety, it's fine. I'm good with it.
Absolutely. And that's what I was saying earlier about taking things as an individual basis. You know, you never know why somebody does or doesn't have a mask on. And so assuming they just are not caring or not doing it for the right reasons, like, we can't make that assumption. So, you know, if it's like, if I have an anxiety disorder and wearing the mask makes me spiral, and you're anxious because you're afraid that, you know, you're going to get sick from COVID and you're both standing in the Target aisle, you know, looking for a board game so you don't, you know, run crazy at your house with your children, who wins? And I think it's not about winning. It's just about being patient and realizing, like, this is a very nuanced situation. And if you can be safe and take precautions, then, you know, do that. But at the same time, like, don't judge somebody else for something that you might not know, you know, what is going on.
Thank you for your comment, John. And we invite our other listeners to call in with your question or comment at 1-800-552-8502. So self-care is something that is important all the time, but especially right now. Any suggestions as far as self-care and how we can really take care of ourselves mentally, physically, spiritually? What are y'all's recommendations?
I think it's important to remind everyone to take a time out because it can be overwhelming with children, some who are working, the news. Remember to take a time out. As Clint mentioned earlier, take a time out from social media, take a time out from responsibility, take a time out and do something that feels good. Remember to eat well. Eat well-balanced meals. Food feeds us and it also heals us. Limit alcohol, and as Clint mentioned earlier, limit caffeine because they can aggravate your anxiety, they can trigger panic attacks. And two more things, exercise, because it's good for you and it is good to you. And remember to try to have great sleep hygiene and try to get enough rest. Those are some really basic ways to just take care of yourself. It sounds easy, but a lot of times we forget to do those little things.
Absolutely. I mean, you'd think in Treeport we're going to have the best shaped people on earth because you can't find a dumbbell or a barbell or a, you know, a stretch band or anything anywhere in the city. It's like that and toilet paper just instantly win as soon as the gym's closed. So, you know, thank goodness phase two is coming back. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be like January 1st all over again. We're all going to be trying to hurry up and get, you know, what we can out of the gym over the next couple of weeks. So, yeah, go to the gym, work out. I mean, I think those are things, especially as therapists, I know all three of us would nod our heads and say, yes, we're telling our clients this, regardless of if we're in a pandemic or not. Like, can you get up and stretch for 15 minutes every morning? And I have to look in the mirror and ask myself the same thing. Like, you know, it takes 15 minutes to stretch, take a walk, you know, deep breathing, do some meditation. You know, right now, I mean, there's so many things online that people are giving out for free that cost $90 a year, typically. You know, what is it? Headspace, the Headspace app, you know, is mindful meditation. You know, do some things that are entertaining, pick up a book and read it, you know, get in something that it takes you to another world where you're not maybe in this experience and escape in a healthy way. I know we tend to want to escape in a lot of unhealthy ways, like the opposite of all those things we just suggested, you know, eat bad food, get a pizza, lay around and watch Netflix. And hey, like we said in the very beginning, if you got to do that, you got to do that and don't shame yourself for it. But also know that you're adding up negativity. And so, you know, you got to add some good stuff in there too. Like Natasha kind of listed all the great things. So I don't really have much more to it.
So some of us are starting to venture out, but some of us are still needing to stay socially isolated. Loneliness, what should people be doing to connected? Any suggestions?
I mean, I think it's safe to meet outside. I mean, I think, you know, that's been kind of the recommended thing if you're going to meet. And so, you know, I think people who are struggling with those kind of things can meet with somebody, you know, outdoors in a big backyard and sit a good distance away and try to have some conversation and some connection. I don't see that being, you know, a risk as long as somebody's really taking care of themselves. For those that are at greatest risk, you know, I think Zooming, maybe doing some kind of spiritual formation, Bible study, you know, whatever it is that your, you know, higher power tells you to do with other people in community and not losing that connection. Because even though telehealth is not my first primary choice, you know, it's worked really well for 8 or 9 weeks. And I've been surprised by how much, you know, it's been doable and manageable. So same thing with our friends and our family, you know, make sure we're Zooming and spending time with each other and trying to find those connections, maybe do a book club, you know, maybe do some things like that, that helps you to, you know, find connection and seek out things that don't make you feel so lonely.
And remember yes. that face-to-face, I'm sorry, as Clint was saying, it really makes a difference when you're able to see the face and see the nonverbal cues and have those types of conversations. And so even if it means one family member has to don a mask and go teach grandma how to Zoom or something along those lines, let's remember that we want everyone to have that face-to-face contact if at all possible, even if it's via mm-hmm. video, it really makes a difference.
Yep.
Yeah, no, it's great that we have these this technology now, because it has made you know, continuing counseling possible and staying in touch with friends and family possible. And phone calls are great, but also being able to see the person, it's just a whole different level of interaction that really helps to combat that loneliness and feelings of isolation.
Absolutely. I mean, we're all mental.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say we're all mental health matters. So I would say, you know, one of those other self-cares is find a therapist or a counselor, you know, I mean, I doubled down on my own therapy, you know, while this thing has been going on, just to make sure I'm taking care of myself even more for my clients. So, you know, practice what we preach. And so, you know, I think, you know, calling somebody and having that weekly check-in that's not anybody else, that you can freak out or you can complain or you can yell about your kids or your husband or you can yell about your, you know, wife, or you can, you know, whatever it is, having a person that's safe for you, that is going to hear you, whether it's about racism, whether it's about COVID, you know, having a person that is going to see you and listen to your story, because I think that's really all we need. We need validation. We need to be seen. We need to be heard. And what a better way to do that than, you know, going to therapy. If you know, it feels kind of cheesy saying it since we're all three therapists, but I do think that's, you know, super important. It has been super helpful in my own life. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know that y'all are doing the same thing that we are at my office, that, you know, we're doing some phone, we're doing some online, we're doing some in the office, and it just really depends on the needs of the patient and then also their comfort and their risks. And and so, you know, we're continuing to provide those services, but in as safe a manner as possible and you know, what the patient and the therapist are most comfortable with.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're wiping down things and, you know, staying 6 feet apart and doing all the things we can do to.
Yeah, I don't know if any of the surfaces in my office will have any paint left on them after all this is done.
Absolutely. That was my wife's biggest thing, was like, man, everybody's using all this Lysol. It's killing us in one way or the other. You know, like we need to use like healthy doTERRA or something, like, you know, there's just so much stuff that's out there right now with chemicals. But, you know, we got to do what we got to do.
Yeah. I invite our listeners to call in with your question or comment. The number is 1-800-552-8502. This evening, we have licensed professional counselors, Clint Davis and Natasha Fields, and we are talking about COVID-19 and mental health and just good mental health in general. Let's talk a little bit more about some of the things that are going on in the news right now. I know, Clint, that you have posted some things, and I'd like for you to talk about that a little bit. I know I see you on Facebook occasionally posting things. What are your thoughts about what's going on, and any suggestions on how we should be processing all of this?
Yeah, I think, you know, we were talking about this in group today with the guys, and, you know, I think one of the biggest things I see in communication, you know, is everybody is responding very emotionally, and sometimes that's appropriate. But we, again, for me, we have to listen, and scientifically that makes sense to me, you know, to nerd out about the brain. You know, our right brain is emotions and fantasy and art and music, and our left brain is logic. And when two people are arguing or somebody's very upset, in order for them to learn or to hear you, you have to validate the right brain. You have to calm down those emotions by saying, I hear you, I see you, I'm sorry. Man, that must really, you know, stink. That must be really hard for you. What I hear you saying is this and that. and then they can calm down, and then we can have a conversation about learning or changing things or making a difference. And so when somebody right now is talking about, you know, let's just be specific, Black Lives Matter, and you're, you know, we talk about white guilt or systemic racism and all these things, you know, when your first instinct is to say, well, I don't do that, or that's not what I, you know, you're invalidating the person, and all that does is make their right brain go danger, danger, and they get more worked up. Instead, you know, what you can say is, well, tell me more about that. You know, how can I help you? Oh, I see that you're hurting. And just because you validate someone's feelings does not mean that you agree with the way we should change things, or does not mean that you're agreeing that you did that or that you're responsible. It just means that you hear the person and you see them for what they are. And, you know, cognitive dissonance is something that we all struggle with. Cognitive dissonance is when somebody changes your worldview by bringing something into it, and it causes you anxiety and fear, and it shakes up your beliefs, and so it's uncomfortable. And our instant response is, I don't want to be uncomfortable, so I'm going to double down on my belief system and the justifications for it so that this dissonance goes away. And the real reality is that we have to kind of sit in some uncomfort for a while and learn and figure out, okay, how much of this is something that we can change? How much of this stuff am I responsible for? What can I do instead of just reacting, you know, defensively? And so that's been kind of my biggest push in my own family, with my own friends, you know, with my clients is, hey, it's okay to be uncomfortable for a little while. You know, it's okay to sit and question and ask, you know, ask more questions and learn more. We can always get to learning. I tell my wife and my kids that all the time. Like, my 5-year-old's throwing a huge fit and freaking out. That's not the time for me to lecture him and teach him. My job is to connect with him and de-escalate him. And later we can go back and say, hey, buddy, you can't hit your kid. I mean, your brother with the Lightning McQueen or the, you know, whatever toy. But in the moment, very, very rarely is it the time to teach. And so I think that's what we have to do right now is listen when people are super upset. Because it just makes no sense if somebody's screaming and crying in front of you that they're in pain for you to say, no, you're not, or I didn't cause that pain. And to think that's going to actually help that person or that's going to work.
Yeah, I think it's important to remember that listening doesn't mean that you're thinking about what your rebuttal is going to be while the person's talking. That means actually listening to what they are saying, giving it your full attention, and really trying to fully take in the information that they're putting out there for you. Natasha, what are your thoughts or comments?
I think that it's just important that we are gracious, not only with ourselves, but with other people, and remember that we're all coming from different perspectives. We can always agree to disagree, but we don't have to be disagreeable. And so respect and remembering that we're all learning, we're all going through this together, and we can have different perspectives and balance and still love each other.
And we have another caller from Shreveport this time. Please go ahead with your question or comment.
Susie, I wanted to nudge and invite the therapist to perhaps clarify or expand on their comments regarding, while we certainly don't want to judge others, whether based on their actions, whether, for example, mask or not mask, but I think maybe there was an accommodation to a post-truth perspective that need not be made. If masks did absolutely no good whatsoever, and it was purely for someone's good feeling, then sure, to mask or not mask is fine. But if masks really do make even a little bit of difference during a public health crisis, then perhaps the person in Target or Lowe's should order online, do curbside pickup, or turn around, go home and get a mask.
I'm guessing that was a response for me.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, I can respond. I can respond to that. Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, that's going to happen. You know, I think sometimes people, you know, make a choice and they don't make the right choice based on, you know, all kinds of circumstances. My point wasn't to say that people shouldn't have masks on or should have masks on. It's just we can only control what we can control. So if you're out there frustrated with somebody about what they're doing, you're spending a lot of energy when you don't have any control over why that person is or isn't doing what you think they should be doing. So that was more my focus. You know, we can never mandate or legalize morality. So, you know, people are going to have different things and different choices and different experiences. And I think we're talking about mental health. We spend a lot of energy and anxiety being frustrated with what we think other people's choices should or shouldn't be, with very limited information on why they're doing what they're doing. So, you know, that would be my suggestion, is more about not whether you should or shouldn't wear a mask. It would be, how do we handle it as individuals when somebody's not doing the thing that we should?
Yeah, it's more the emotional reaction to the things around you, and reacting with frustration or reacting with acceptance. Not necessarily that you're accepting that you're agreeing with a person not wearing a mask, but just the fact that you don't have control over that person and their behavior.
Absolutely. Because, you know, like you said, there's been a lot of confusion, and some people don't handle confusion well, and some people choose to make decisions based on the information that they think is good and best and relevant, and, you know, that's not always the right choices. People make bad choices or flash judgments, and then they look back at it and go, oh, man, I shouldn't have went in there without the mask on, or, you know, maybe they had to, and they had to have something, and they were like, you know what, I'm going to do it this once, and, you know, then I'm going to make sure I have it. I mean, there's all kinds of things. And so to have the perspective that, you know, oh, well, you should never make a mistake or always have perfect judgment, and you didn't, like, you know, that's pretty hard, because I think all of us, you know, in the world make errors in judgment at times and wish we would have done something a little bit differently or slightly differently. And, you know, I think it's just the idea of not taking offense to everything everybody does as if it's personal to you.
Suggestions about coping with depression right now? I know that a lot of people are there are a lot of people who are having difficulties with their businesses, or that are struggling with unemployment and a lot of financial uncertainty, and that can lead to a lot of anxiety and then also sadness and depression. Any suggestions on dealing with depression and just coping with those feelings of sadness?
I think one of the big things is to really remember that you're not alone, that it's not uncommon for depression to be one of the results of what we're dealing with, especially if you factor in loneliness, and remember that most of us, if not all of us, are in some way grieving a loss. I really want to highlight that if you feel as though it's overwhelming, if you're unable to move through it within a short period of time, it's really important that you seek help. And it's really important that you get to a provider so that they can assess you and just make sure that you're getting the help that you need and you don't get stuck in that depressed state. But really, one of the things that I would kind of go back to is self-care, making sure that you're taking care of yourself, that you're reaching out to others as much as you can, and working to live a quality life as much as is in your control.
Yeah, depression is so tough. You know, I think some of the hardest times in my life, and then hardest times with clients, is just that when there's severe depression and you just, you know, you have no motivation to do the things that you know are right and know are good, but you just cannot get yourself up to do it. And I think that's where community comes in too. And that's, I mean, I think that's the double bind of COVID. It's like, normally you could get up and go do these things with people, and so we're trying to social distance and everybody's got to have a mask on. And so, you know, at the same time, like, there, you got to take your individual risk. If you're super depressed out there and you're really struggling, maybe it's okay for you to take a walk with your best friend. You know, if you're getting suicidal and all these restrictions and all these things are causing you so much mental health that you're going to take your life, then maybe you should, you know, go and do what you have to do and manage it as best you can and keep social distancing and whatever you have to do. But go be with that person. Like Natasha said, go to your grandmother's house and sit in the yard and sit six feet away and have your best friend come over in the morning and check on you. And, you know, obviously now we're moving into phase two and there's a little bit more freedom in doing that. But you've got to weigh your mental health out with, you know, the pain and suffering of everything else. So depression is something that, you know, we don't want to let linger and let continue to get worse and worse and worse, because, you know, we can be in a dark hole that we can't pull ourselves out of before we know it. And we certainly can't do it alone. And I try to tell people, you know, depression and anxiety, you know, it's about chemistry, not character. You know, it's about a biological thing that has changed because of circumstances, but it's not about strength. It's not about you're weak because you can't get up and do these things. And unfortunately, our friends and our family, if they haven't been through depression, they don't really understand that. And so they, you know, can sometimes say things insensitively, even though they're not intentionally doing that, that that makes us feel weak and stupid, and, you know, and that just spirals us in depression more. So find people in your life that understand, who can support you in a way that's gracious and patient, but that also will, you know, challenge you a little bit and push you a little bit and get you up, make you take a shower and make you come out and sit in the yard, even if you don't like it, because before you know it, oh man, I'm glad I did this, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unfortunately, a lot of times we may say things to people thinking it's encouraging, but really it's negating their feelings. You know, oh, it's going to be okay. It's not that big of a deal. You're going to be fine. It, you know, just try not to think about it. And while that's well-meaning, a lot of times that's not really helpful to the person. And I just encourage people to, you know, if you need help, reach out. If you don't have insurance, if finances are tight, you know, reach out to my office, to Clint, I'm sure your office. If we don't take your insurance, if we can't provide services, we will find someone who can. There are other organizations that do low and no cost counseling. You know, we will find a provider for you somewhere.
Absolutely.
That's what we
Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, I see us all, you know, all in this together. So I always think of it, you know, when I go to therapy myself and when I see people in our office, I'm like, man, that's one more person who works at Target, or that's one more doctor, that's one more, you know, therapist, or that's one more whoever that's healthier, that's impacting my community and my friends and my people, you know, better. And so I think if you call in and you need some help, man, we're here to help you. I know Dr. Visconti definitely is. And so, you know, we can get you in the right place with the right people and the right fit. You know, there's somebody you see and you don't really feel comfortable with them, but it's the best you got. Like, reach out and shift. You know, you're not going to offend that therapist or, you know, offend that person. Just find what's best for you.
Yeah. I mean, I recommend that people, you know, it's like before you buy a car, you're going to test drive it, and you should do the same thing with therapists. Give them a test drive. And if it doesn't feel right, then give another one a test drive, because that relationship that you have with the therapist is going to be so important to, it's one of the major factors in what determines whether therapy is going to be successful.
Absolutely. Yeah, it doesn't really matter all the letters you have behind your name, the theories, and the, you know, techniques, if you don't have connection with people, that's for sure.
Exactly.
So we have just about a minute or two left. Any last minute recommendations for surviving COVID-19?
Honestly, all I would say is just try to take care of yourself and take care of each other as much as possible. Remember that most of the emotions you're having are normal. That's why we have a conversation about it, and everyone can agree, you know, that these are common emotions. And if you need help, reach out, because there are those of us here that are really willing and able and ready to help you.
Absolutely. You know, like Natasha said, continue to be graceful with each other, you know, whether it's COVID or racism or violence or riots or whatever. You know, just try to be patient and try to be accepting and loving. And if somebody comes to you and says, I don't like this, or hey, will you please put a mask on, or hey, will you do this? You know, if it's not hurting you and it's not offending you, do it. You know, take a moment to listen and learn and be patient and accept that people have got a lot of stuff going on. And if you're the one not in a crisis right this second, then maybe we can be patient with the person who is.
Well, thank you both. Thank you, Clint Davis and Natasha Fields with Clint Davis Counseling and Integrative Wellness. We appreciate your time and your expertise.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. For all mental health questions, consult a mental health professional. The views and opinions expressed on Mental Health Matters do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Red River Radio, LSUS, or its employees. Radio.org. Mental Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The producer is Renee Moran, and production assistance has been provided this evening by Wally Derleth and Kermit Poling. Support for this program comes from the Noel Foundation and also from the Community Foundation of North Louisiana, and a gift from Kit and Lisa Gamble. I'm Dr. Shelley Visconti. Thank you for joining us this evening.